As a CEO or entrepreneurial leader, you want to focus on overall vision, alignment, and running a great business. You want your business to run efficiently with less effort and little pain. Welcome to Operationally Speaking with Sergio Samel. Sergio and his very special guests will give you the tools to run your business well and gain the momentum to break through to the next level. Now, here is your host, Sergio Samel.
Welcome, 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 welcome to episode number 64 of Operationally Speaking, where we exclusively focus on the art and science of operating entrepreneurial businesses. I'm Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm the principal EOS implementer as well as Colby and predictive index specialist at Get Business Momentum, where we help owners, CEOs, and leaders of small to mid-sized entrepreneurial companies like yours get what you want out of your business by implementing a simple, well-proven, and complete system for operating your company. As a result, you regain control while dramatically increasing the value of your business. In the last episode, I spent this time with Marshall Goldsmith, the preeminent executive coach and best-selling author of over 30 books, including three New York Times bestsellers. Marshall and I spoke about the behaviors of entrepreneurial leaders. We covered the three key leadership challenges you, entrepreneurial business leaders, most commonly face. We spoke about what business leaders like you must do to become great coaches to the people you lead and manage. We even covered his masterful daily questions method for building engagement in business and life. Quite remarkable man. So if you missed any of those previous episodes, including that, you can listen to all of them on demand here on the Voice America Business Channel, as well as wherever you listen to podcasts, such as on iTunes, Stitcher, Player FM, Pocket Cast, and others. And now, let me introduce my great guest for today, Ron Carucci. Ron, you are the co-founder and managing partner at Neverland, working with CEOs and executives pursuing transformational change for their organizations, leaders, and industries. You have a 30-year track record helping some of the world's most influential executives tackle challenges of strategy, organization, and leadership, from startups to Fortune 10 companies, turnarounds to the new markets and strategies, overhauling leadership and culture to redesigning for growth. You have worked in more than 25 countries and on four continents. Thankfully, I don't think there are too many companies in Antarctica, are there? You are a best-selling author of 8 books, including the recent Amazon number one, Rising to Power. You are a regular contributor to HBR and Forbes and have been featured in Fortune, CEO Magazine, Business Insider, MSNBC, Business Week, Smart Business, and many others. So welcome to Operationally Speaking, Ron.
Sergio, it's a great pleasure to be with you. Thanks for having me.
It's an honor and a great pleasure on my part as well. So the listeners to our podcast and show know very well, I always start on a slightly lighter side on the premise that business gets a little bit too intense and serious. So we got to kind of lighten up the atmosphere here first. So Ron, do you have a favorite business anecdote or joke you can share with our listeners?
Well, one of the things organizations are funny places, right? There's lots to make fun of. There's lots of important ways we need to step back and lighten it up, because sometimes people in organizations do the funniest things. I often tell a story of the old anecdote about the emperor has no clothes. So one of my cues with my clients is when they're behaving in a way that is just, not helpful, what my code language is to them, and I say it in public and they know what that means, I just say, you're naked. And they all know what it means. It's a funny, lighthearted way of helping people remind themselves that their behavior is not in check.
Yes, well, that's actually a very good, very good coaching practice, and I may steal that from you, Ron, in my own practice. I like it. So, one other question before we get to the meat of our conversation, which is, my listeners always know already this. I'm always interested in what is it that got people to be who they are in the present time. So, for you, Ron, is there like an event or a force or maybe a person in the early stages of your life that has had the strongest influence on you becoming who you are today?
Gosh, it's a there are just so many, Sergio. I've been very blessed with great people in my life, formative people in my life. But I think one of them, I would say, it was in my early 20s, it was a very crucible time in my life. I had experienced a number of really painful deaths, including of my father. But at the same time, I was working in Europe, in Germany. And I was, of all places, I was at the chapel in Dachau doing a program there. And, you know, back at this day, we didn't have the words diversity and inclusion. But I think if we had, that's probably what this working session would have been called. There were military and civilian, State Department, government, a variety of German and American people in the room. And in one point in the middle of the program, a young American military soldier raised his hand as part of the discussion and said, I'm just so tired of being trained to hate. And I was fascinated that something we had done on the platform would have provoked that. We went out for beers afterwards, so I wanted to learn more about why he felt that way. And I think at a time in my life where I was grieving and also a young professional trying to have impact, I think that was a place, I don't know that I understood it at the time, but a turning point for me where I began to understand that, it's interesting telling, I had begun my career in the arts and, telling great stories was interesting, but this was a chance to, not only enter my own story of grief, but enter someone else's story of and that entering other people's stories to help them write them differently. I felt like, gosh, that's a much more meaningful way to spend my career. And I think that became the turning point of where I began to shift toward the career I'm in now.
Powerful story, Ron. Powerful story. Thank you so much. So tell us a little bit about Navlent. In other words, more specifically, what its purpose is and perhaps what it's actually best at. And, maybe even where do you see it in, say, 3 or so years?
It's so funny you're asking that question, Sergio. We're in the middle of that process right now as a firm, wrestling with our strategic direction and our identity and how we talk about it. And in the digital world, with so many other new practitioners doing what we do, how do we talk about it? So it's so funny you asked that question.
Well, all right. So if you can check, kind of divulge your biggest secrets right now, I won't tell anybody. It's just between you and I.
I wish we had the answers as articulately as I would love them. We've been around 14 years, and we're very fortunate that we get to spend our days traipsing through the halls of organizations alongside senior leaders who are pursuing some dramatic transformational change, whether it's a strategic pivot or their organizations are all tangled up and they can't get anything done, or their leaders aren't prepared to lead the way they need them to. But in some intersection of those spaces of identity, strategy, organization, and all the configurations of what we do, and then leaders guiding it all, we play. And we play very well because we see those three things as one thing, not three. You can't disentangle the identity and direction of an enterprise from the identity of how it's built to deliver that identity and the leaders who are guiding it. And so you can't, too much of the world today and the consulting world especially treats those things as 10 things with little subparts. And when you forget that it's one whole story, story of the organization and its strategy, the organization and its leaders and what it's trying to accomplish is one complex story that when you pull any one part of it, you have to switch all the others. And so I think we're really good at seeing all the parts together. We see them as a whole. When we do our diagnostic work, when we do our interventions, when we provide solutions, we treat them as a whole, not that's greater than the sum of its parts. And I think that's why we have the impact that we do.
So it's very interesting. So, of course, I assume that, you know, some of the stuff that you are actually attempting to do for Neverland itself is the normal stuff that you do for others, right?
Well, don't they say the cobbler's kids always have no shoes?
Well, I was going to lead exactly into that question. So have you engaged an outside coach or a facilitator to actually help you go through this?
Sergio, did someone call you before this interview to tell you to ask that question?
No, but that's what my mind went through as I was very, very carefully listening to you.
Well, because so Rio, we have our next offsite scheduled for New Orleans in November, and we're actually arguing now over who should be we know we have to have an outsider. We can't do it ourselves, and we have to have somebody facilitate it. And so we're interviewing folks now, and I just feel sorry for whoever we pick.
Well, listen, I will offer you the famous line that I borrow from actually one of my guests here on the show, which is, you can never see you can never read the label from inside the jar.
Right.
So keep that in mind.
And we know that. We know that. We need somebody who's going to have a heavy handed enough muscle to be able to handle us renegades.
Can I apply?
But I do think that I do think we're trying to take our own medicine because we know it's hard work. The world's changed. When we started our work 15 years ago, you know, we'd already been in the field a while. The organizational behavior field, the intersections of strategy and organization, were a fairly nation field. Now there are just hundreds of thousands of practitioners across any one of those three spaces.
Exactly.
And so now trying to differentiate and figure out how to talk about that and figure out how to, be part of that in a way that's relevant and fresh. It's a reinvention more than anything else. And it's difficult. You know, we're not wanting for work.
Absolutely. But
we are thinking about the next 3 to 5 years for sure.
Which gets us to sort of really in the kind of the crux of the battery. You and I titled this conversation Organized by Design, which assumes that there is a lot of work in organizing, which is work on the organization as opposed to in. So we only have about 40 seconds before we take our first break, but really quickly, what's the difference between working in the organization, which we do all day long, and working on the business, the organization?
Every leader needs the opportunity to zoom out and see how the only source of competitive advantage any leader has is how they configure the assets of the organization, their processes, their people, their physical assets, their capabilities to deliver a promise to customers that no one else can deliver as good as they can. And you get so – it's like the frog in the boiling water. You get so steeped in doing it, you forget to – well, like you said before, you can't read the label from the inside of a jar. You have to step out and look at that machinery to see is it optimally performing. And often it's not. And you have to look at it as one thing, not a bunch of different levers. You know, if you're seeing behavior problems, you don't play the culture level and get new values or put everybody through a training program. You know, if you have too much cost, you just de-layer and reorganize and change the org chart. We all have these quick fixes we do to our organization, and often they wind up looking like people who've had way too much cosmetic surgery where their faces are all stretched and contorted. We nip and tuck our organizations to death rather than stepping back and taking a holistic look at them. So when we come back, we'll talk about that.
Absolutely. So don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Sergio Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
Tune in to The Soul of Enterprise, Business in the Knowledge Economy, with co-hosts Ron Baker and Ed Kless. Ron and Ed will show you how to recognize that wealth is created by intellectual capital. It's all in the possibilities that we can create and that are created for us. These possibilities are destined to be discovered by human imagination and through the service of others, creating a brighter future for all of us. The Soul of Enterprise is heard live every Friday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time, 4 p.m. Eastern, on the Voice America Business Channel, and simulcast at the same time on the Voice America Variety Channel.
Have you become a member yet? Sign up now to become a member of Voice America. It's always free and easy. Plus, you get to take advantage of some great member benefits. Get unlimited access to millions of hours of on-demand content across all of our channels. Keep track of your favorite episodes, shows, and hosts in your own customizable library. Find out what shows you might be interested in based on your favorites. Plus, you get insider access with our newsletter. Membership gives you more. Sign up at voiceamerica.com and click register at the top right.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now. Toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Ron Carucci, managing partner of Navland. So, Ron, before the break, we spoke about the difference between working in the organization or in the business versus working on the organization, on the business. So, why is having strategy clarity so essential to driving, you know, this the organizational design choices that we want to get to?
Well, I think, you know, if you understand that an organization is nothing more than an expression of a strategy, right? It's mm-hmm. it's the embodiment of an identity. It also presumes you know what strategy is. So often when I walk into an organization, I ask, well, show me your strategy. When they're in some sort of pain, there's some sort of ditch they've got themselves in and they're wanting help to get out of. Mm-hmm. And when I ask for the strategy, I get a lot of counterfeits. I get the mission statement and the vision statement. I get the value statement. I get the annual financial goals. I get the product quotas. I get the sales territories. I get some manifestation of something they're trying to get done, but I don't get any sense of who they are. And when I ask them, okay, tell me why, what are the things you do better than anybody else that would cause a customer that you want to sell to pick you over somebody else? Why would they?
Actually, perfect question. By the way, if I can interrupt you for a second, I would like to, kind of in the spirit of our conversation before the break, I would like to ask you a variation of this question about Navland, okay? So here's the variation that I always like. What's the one thing about Navland that nobody other than your clients or customers knows about?
Well, in terms of who we are, people often don't know that we're a really, really fun bunch of people to spend time with. I think our clients are always surprised because they see us as this, you know, this force of nature that comes into their organizations to get change done. And then that they suddenly realize they really like us and they enjoy us and we're like family. Mm-hmm. So I think, if I had to sort of pick a secret sauce, it's that we care so deeply about our clients and are so passionate about their success that we have a lot of fun with them. We actually like being with them.
So would you say that that's actually a piece of the strategy? If somebody came into your organization and did the same thing that you are talking about a minute earlier, that you are not getting very straight or very substantive answers from your own clients, would that be a piece of it?
Could be. I think relationships are one. We have four, what we call our brand pillars, four things mm-hmm. that we believe are essential to how we do things. And our relationships are certainly one of them. I don't think people expect us to. I think, we have a lot of videos on our website, but we have an outtakes video that's really funny mm-hmm. of all the mm-hmm. outtakes of our filming. And I think people love watching that one the most because it's really funny and they really see a very different goofy side of us. That we, we do take our work very seriously. We definitely don't take ourselves that seriously.
that's great. So back to your earlier answers about strategy. So tell me a little bit more about what you mean by that. So in other words, you said earlier that you walk into these organizations early on and you ask them about their strategy and they give you this, that, and the other thing. And none of that is really what you actually are asking for. So tell me a little bit more about what really is that you're asking for.
So once you can articulate for me, what differentiates you? Is it service? Mm-hmm. Is it price? Is it innovation? Is it, what's the solution you really have that the customers you're trying to sell to or the clients you're trying to sell to really, really want? And they want it only from you because you're best at it. And what are the capabilities you've invested in? So if you have to be really good at, analytics, so you have to be really good at sales, so you have to be really good at, operational logistics. You can show me that you've made such investments in that capability that you every dollar you put in brings $5 in the door. Now I know who you are. And once I start to understand who you are and why you believe you can compete and win on the terms you want to compete and win on, now I can tell you how to organize, right? Because that informs exactly. I should then look at the way you've configured the organization and I should be able to say, okay, well, here's how you bounded your work, right? So the problem in any organization is that as it gets bigger, it fragments. You get smaller and smaller pieces, and the smaller and smaller pieces don't always coordinate and work well together. Well, the two problems are, one, are they the right pieces? Have you put boundaries around the work the way you should? And then two, how do you coordinate between the pieces? Mm. And what's often painful for many leaders to understand is that not all work is equal. Right? There's a small portion of that work in your organization of all the gazillions of tasks that you do, we call competitive work. And that's the work that is especially aimed at delivering on that differentiation of that strategy. It's your secret sauce. It's the work that makes you your money. It's the talent, the capabilities, the stuff that really sets you apart.
So do you have a couple of examples of what the piece of the what the competitive work is for, say, a couple of your clients, and obviously without disclosing necessarily
sure.
names.
So let's imagine that innovation is one of the things your clients really want from you. You are a truly cutting edge new solution provider. Well, that means your R&D, your market research, your scientific work is your competitive work. Let's imagine it's your service. That means your customer insights, your customer service, your sales, your order fulfillment. Those capabilities are truly world class. Let's say it's cost. Let's say you really are the price value provider. That means your manufacturing, your processes, your order fulfillment are truly lean and efficient and technologically very advanced to take a lot of cost out. So you can really provide great value to your clients in price, but also make a margin.
Exactly. So
that's where I'd look. Next to that competitive work, and that's probably about 15 to 20% of all the work in your organization. Mm-hmm. Next to that work is what we call competitive enabling. That's the work that supports that work, the work that comes directly behind it to make sure it goes as you intend for it to do. And that's maybe another 15 to 20% of your work. The rest of your work, half of it or more, is what we call necessary work. It's
right.
the work that keeps the lights on. It's the work that you don't have to do better than anybody else, but you have to do it on parity, so at least it keeps you out of jail or keeps you compliant with regulations, or it keeps the lights on.
Right, exactly.
And now, when you mix that work, when you mix necessary work with competitive work, and often leaders do, it just painfully dilutes the competitive work because the urgency and the immediacy of it just takes over. And so putting boundaries around those that work, that could be boundaries along the lines of customer segments or along the lines of geographies or functions or regions or some other version of how you bound the work to protect that competitive work is really a choiceful point. And most leaders don't make it thoughtfully. They just make it, you know, by an org chart.
So organizationally, how do you actually protect that competitive work? How do you create those boundaries?
By making sure that when you group the work, you group it in a way that keeps it apart, that separates it. So the people doing that work are your most talented, your strongestly invested, and not having to spend much of their day doing necessary work, right? Mm. That's the exclusive thing. That's the way how they spend their days. They're not people who are doing, you know, a third of their day competitive, a third of their day competitive enabling, and you know, half their day doing necessary work and just bouncing between all of it. And because and the symptom you'll see is every day the priorities change. I don't know what's important. That's a symptom. Mm. Or you'll hear every day is a new crisis. Whatever the crisis is, that's what I go do.
All right.
When you hear things like that, you know you have a symptom of a poorly configured organization.
Mm. So it all boils down, it sounds like, Ron, to making sure that when you define, for example, for a function in the organization that's, you know, a seat where somebody is actually occupying, when you define the roles and responsibilities of that particular seat, that if that seat is within the realm of the competitive work, that all or the vast majority of those roles and responsibilities for that seat are inside the competitive work realm and not outside, not in the supportive domain, right?
Yep, exactly.
So that would be the sort of like the kind of the test that should be applied. So you can go around and basically say, take every single seat in the organization and take the, you know, the definition of the responsibilities for that seat and apply this test. You know, what's the percentage? If that seat is within the competitive work realm, what's the percentage of those responsibilities that are competitive work? And if the percentage is not, what would you say the right bar would be?
You know, 100%? I don't think it definitely depends on the organization and it depends on, you know, its resource constraints.
Of course.
But what I would say is, you know, if the vast majority of their day is spent confused by how they contribute and confused by the role their work plays, right, that's a good sign that they don't know. My bigger concern is often, Sergio, that the organization doesn't know what that work is, right? So if you ask everybody in the organization, they're going to tell you my work's critical. The accounting people are going to tell you their work is critical. The HR people are going to tell you their work is critical. Everybody's going to tell you why their work's competitive. And so, you know, unless the organization has stepped out of working in it to work on it and step back and say, okay, but from our marketplace perspective, from our customer's perspective, what work in our organization? And sometimes it's not in one specific function, right? So, for example, innovation is not the as an asset, it's not just R&D, market insights, innovation people, product developers, or marketing, right? It's at the intersection of all that work that you get innovation. And so how are the boundaries of that bigger set of people configured? They may all work in their little departments, but the reality is not one of them is the innovator. All of them are the innovator. So the boundary is not just around a function. The boundary is around a set of capabilities that come together. That now you have the issue of coordination. How do I make sure all the people work together as if they are contributing to innovation, not just their one little part of it?
Wonderful. Actually, really, makes perfect sense.
And that's really where the magic happens.
Mm. Well, so we're going to take another break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about how to approach literally like change and whether the change is change in direction or it changes change in size, and how entrepreneurs or entrepreneurial leaders actually approach that and what are the pitfalls when they usually do that. So don't go away. We'll be right back.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serge Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
How is your work-life balance? In most businesses, no matter where you are positioned, there is always room for improvement. If you're an executive, learn insight about your business. Are you an employee? Learn how to better work with your team. Even if you're not in business, you can learn where your strengths and weaknesses can be played to their best potential. The Work-Life Balance with host Rick Morris can be heard live every Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on the Voice America Business Channel.
Now you don't have to stay linked to your desktop or laptop. Take Voice America on the go and listen anywhere. Get our mobile app for iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android at the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
Whether the market's up or down, or if you're looking to improve your portfolio, our experts are ready to talk to you. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Ron Carucci, managing partner of Navalent. So, Ron, before the break, we spoke about this very, very kind of fundamental issue of lack of clarity as to what the primary strategy of a business is has as its impact on the organizational soundness or healthness or organizational structure of that organization. So now, of course, businesses go through numerous numbers of changes over time, some of them having to do with growth, some of them having to do with adjustment of their strategy as in response to, for example, changes in the marketplace or in the industry or in the world in general. So now entrepreneurs or leaders have to adjust. They have to adjust the organizational structure to that, and doing that, they have to keep in mind the new strategy. So, what are the pitfalls that you've noticed working with many clients, as you have, that entrepreneurial leaders fall into when they try to scale their organizations?
Well, so it's a great question, Sergio. So often they confuse growing and scaling, right? So they think adding more means scaling, and they don't realize they're adding costs at the same rate they're adding revenue. The reality is that organizations have to divide. They, like cells in a body as it forms, mitosis has to happen. The question is, where are you dividing the work? As I said before, competitive work has to be organized for maximum impact and effectiveness, the best and the best. Everything else has to be organized for maximum efficiency, as minimal cost as possible, as efficiently as possible, as repeatable as possible. And so as you're adding resources and dividing the work, you have to be mindful of what that strategy is. But too often, the squeaky wheel gets the grease. So the person saying, we need more people in my department, we need more technology, whoever's screaming gets the budget for it, and they just go off on their own and start working on their own little piece of the pie. And so you have mitosis happening at different rates in different ways. And now you have nobody who's responsible for keeping it all glued together. And so fragmentation is happening. And unless you step back and ask yourself, how do I keep coordination and cohesion and integration happening here? It's not going to be anybody's goal. So they forget that they've got to keep the pieces working together. That's the first mistake they make. The second mistake they make is when they try and institute change, they react. So they get so frustrated, they just pull whatever silver bullet lever they can find. They pull the let's reorg bullet and just change the org chart and they think, if I change hierarchy here and I change reporting relationships, I'll get more of what I want. Or they pull the let's run everybody through a training program and get everybody trained on why we're one company. Or let's change the values, you know, put a new value on the values chart or change the values on the values chart when we want new behavior. Or they pull the we need new technology. So let's get everybody on the same platform for email, the same platform for our financial management systems. That'll change things. So they pull these levers in the hopes that they'll act as if there's some silver bullet. And of course, when they don't work or they don't produce or sustain a change they want, they pull others. And so they just keep strafing the organization with bullets. Until they have dilapidated it. Now the organization is very change fatigued. We call it the This Too Shall Pass Club. When people see change coming, they're like, yeah, right. I know. I've seen this before. Just wait it out. It's going to pass. And then nobody can take change seriously, which means when you need an urgent clarion call to the organization to really rally, you can no longer have it because you've squandered all that credibility.
Scalability is a property, in a sense, of an organization, right? Or organization structure on a specific in specific terms. So how does a business leader, let's say an entrepreneurial business leader, know that his or her organization is actually scalable when scalability or scaling actually is required?
It's a great question, Sergio. The first question is repeatability and standardization. So for all of the work, which is, we said before, about half of it, that's your necessary work. Is it being done the same way? Are there, if it's a process that takes 20 steps, can you get it down to 6? And is everybody doing it with the same 6 steps? How much of it can you automate? So making sure that all of the work that has to be done to just move things along is as efficiently organized and repeatable and standardized so that as you bring new people in, you're not bringing their own approach and their own methods and you're not reinventing the wheel every day. And very much when you're going from that startup to grow up phase of an organization where the organization looks a lot like a teenage boy in his dad's suit, right? It's the classic case of I'm a $100 million organization trapped in the body of a $30 million company. So do you really have standardized ways things are done and can you incorporate, can you fold people into the organization into those standards? That's the first question. The second question is, presuming you do know what your competitive and competitive enabling work is on the other side of the ledger, do you know how to find the talent for it? Do you know how to prepare them for it? Are their careers moving along? If you have to layer over people on that side of the house because you don't trust the talent that you have there to take you to the next level, and so you have to go above them, that's telling you you're not scalable. So in the competitive and competitive enabling work, you have to have scalable talent, people who can stretch and grow. And you have to have a pipeline of great lower level talent underneath them to also grow. So those are the first two. And almost always many entrepreneurs fail them both. Beyond that, then I would say governance, right? So do you have governing mechanisms that have distributed decision rights for your organization in a way that matters? Because so often in the grow up phase, all decision roads lead to the senior team or the CEO. Which means we're all sitting around waiting for you to make a decision about something. And so if decision rights are not distributed to below the senior team, and the senior team is clearly understands that it comes together to create a certain degree of value, to make a certain kind of decisions, and that's it. And other types of decisions have been distributed to other bodies of leaders below them, and it's all synchronized in a good way. That way you keep speed happening, right? But often, even if you get past the scalability and the talent question, you slow the organization down when you haven't, when decision making is only happening in one place. So those three, I think, are the most critical ones you have to look at: repeatability and standardization, scalable leadership talent in your competitive work, and governance.
You know, it's interesting, as I'm listening to you, Ron, one thing that came to mind is that a lot of this stuff is what I would call the outer work of organizations. Outer, not meaning outside the organization, but outer as in how the various, agents within the organization relate to each other, how process, how work is divided, how work is carried out, how standardized it is, et cetera, et cetera. So essentially how actions are being taken. But there's another aspect of all of this, and it's kind of interestingly enough captured in this term that you use, which is the grow-up phase, which is the inner work. The inner work inside each one of these people, the people who were just fine in the startup phase of the company, and all of a sudden they are, I don't know, for the lack of a better term, way above their pay grade, in a sense, or way above their heads. So how do you actually get people to also do the inner work that's necessary for them to grow in tandem with the organization, as opposed to being internally inside them, essentially left behind?
You know, I think it's a great question. And I think it's actually a tough balance because, you know, we all have narratives inside our head, right? We all have tapes that explain the world. We call, our term for that is called operative narrative, right? How are you narrating the world? And a lot of times they don't match what's happening outside, right? Especially as things change around us and we feel anxiety because of that, or we feel stressed because of that, or we start to feel obsolete from that, or we worry that we can't make, we know we're above our pay grade and we don't want anybody else to figure it out. And we're afraid that being over our skis could cost us. And so now you have this internal tape about narrating your own self-protection while things around you are changing, and instead of helping you adapt to that. And it's very important that leaders have the self-awareness, the self-management skills to know that that's happening. It's also important for CEOs and executives to know that they're causing it for the people around them, right? By virtue of the fact that you are growing and changing around you, you have to presume that people are not just going along for the ride comfortably. Change by nature is disruptive. It's supposed to cause discomfort. And so if you're not helping the leaders around you manage that discomfort, giving them the ability to be honest about it, when they're over their skis, and preparing them. So giving them the things they need to not be over their skis. If you suddenly change the hill from a blue hill to a black diamond hill, and they've never skied a black diamond before, and you just think, well, they'll figure it out, then you're foolish, right? So if you haven't done the things to prepare them for the bigger mountain you're now skiing as a company, then you've set them up to fail.
So if you were the CEO, where would you send your people to get those kinds of skills, the internal evolution?
It's not training, right? But I do think that that along the way, the entire time you've been giving them experiences of greater responsibility, greater problems to solve, different levels of complexity. Certainly provide them with coaching, to understand how and feedback so they understand how others are experiencing them, so they understand the impact of their behavior and choices. Certainly, have open conversations during your leadership team meetings about the difficulties and challenges of leading. Make sure your executive team meetings have the candor you want, have the open debate that you need. People are not hiding. People are not embellishing. Make sure people are telling you the truth. If you only get all the good news, be worried, because it's not all good news. So I do think you can take a temperature, an ongoing temperature, about the organization's mood for growth. It's tolerance of change. It's tolerance of their own inadequacies and shortfalls and how honest they're being about those. And if people are not regularly talking about that kind of stuff, you should be worried, because it is a real issue. And if everybody's giving you smiles about how exciting growth is and how great things are going and how they can't wait to take the hill with you, and no one's coming to you and saying, crap, boss, I'm not sure I got this one, or I need some help, or I'm not sure I got, can I get some coaching here? Or worse, they're coming to you with a lot of that and you're saying, don't worry, I got it. And you're taking on all the problems for them and you're being Santa Claus. Either way, you're constraining the organization from growth. If your people are not growing with the size of your organization, you're going to at some point hit a wall.
So true and so on topic, Aram. Thank you so much. So we'll take another break. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit more about organized by design, and we'll wrap it up. So don't go away. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Would you like to turn your entrepreneurial organization into a well-oiled machine that runs efficiently with less effort and little pain, so your good business becomes great and you can stop putting out today's fires and focus on its future instead? Serju Samel, our host, helps business owners and CEOs get what they want out of their business by working with their leadership team to implement a complete, highly proven suite of tools and processes. This system for operating your business gets everybody 100% on the same page as to where the business is going and how it will get there. Gets everybody more disciplined and more accountable so that everybody becomes a master of execution, gaining momentum towards your vision, and gets everybody to function as part of cohesive, healthy teams. To find out whether this is for you, contact Sergio at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that's os@getbusinessmomentum.com or directly at 1-617-731-3132.
Higher education faces lots of changes. If you are a student, educator, or in the workforce, you'll want to tune into Big Beacon Radio, Transforming Higher Education. Your host, Dave Goldberg, and his guests will explore the innovations that higher education adopts as it reinvents itself. The world of higher education is constantly changing. Stay on top and stay ahead of the rest. Big Beacon Radio, Transforming Higher Education. Listen Mondays at 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Have you had a chance to check out Voice America's online magazine and blog, Press Pass? If you love our hosts and shows, check out articles that give an even deeper perspective. Plus topics about health and fitness, movie reviews, philosophy, business tips and tactics, spirituality, positive thought, current events, and even more about your favorite host. It's just a click away at vapresspass.com. That's vapresspass.com. VA Press Pass by Voice America. All access, all the time.
We're always talking business.
Talk to an expert.
Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
This is Operationally Speaking. To reach Sergio Samel, if you have a question or comment about the program, please send an email to os@getbusinessmomentum.com. That's os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Now, back to this week's program.
This is Sergio Samel, your host, and I'm sitting here with Ron Carucci, managing partner of Navalent. So, Ron, before we get back to the conversation we were having before the break, I have a quick question for you. So, if anybody made a movie about your life, what would that be called?
The Confused Change Agent. I don't know.
There we go. you might want to call your partners or your friends in Hollywood. You never know.
The accidental consultant.
Accidental consultant. That's also true. All right. So I've heard you say in the past that people confuse org charts as organizations. What do you mean by that?
I wish we could sort of put a moratorium on org charts and for like 5 years say you can't use them. Because they tell you nothing, right? And people people count bodies, they count reporting relationships, they count layers and spans, and then attach meaning to those things that just is not there. An org chart explains hierarchy, right? It explains how we have linked work vertically, and who reports to who, That's all it does. And of course, anybody who works inside a company can tell you, of course, the org chart's not how everything works. It's just who reports to who. And yet they try and use it as a device to understand how the organization's put together. And so, you know, your organization, how things really work, your processes, your culture, your systems, your governance design, your people's talents, your jobs and how jobs are designed. That's all your organization. The org chart just tells one part of a story around who reports to who. And leaders, I watched this recently in a very large, sophisticated scientific organization where one of the most senior people looked at the org chart and started making interpretations of it that just weren't true. Well, where's this? Where's that? This doesn't look much different than your last organization. Why are you changing it? And it was profoundly different, but the org chart didn't tell that story. And so we just have got to stop looking at tables of hierarchy and spans of control as meaning anything more than that.
So true. So true. In fact, you know, my own work, Ron, implementing the entrepreneurial operating system, one thing that I do literally from the get-go is essentially almost exactly what you're saying, abolish the org chart. We use a representation of an organization called the accountability chart that actually defines accountability points. In other words, defines, you know, what each function, not people, but what each function is accountable for. What are the roles and responsibilities exactly of each one of the functions? And then we put people in those functions and see how they do. But we start with the functions, and that is basically a chart or a visual representation of functionality, not of hierarchy, as you put it, or control. Yeah. So absolutely true. So, you know, many of our listeners are essentially entrepreneur readers, whether they are have recently started the business, or maybe they are looking at starting a business, or they are actually running a small to medium sized entrepreneurial businesses. So, and of course, everybody envisions growth in the future, whether it's immediate or further down the road. And we spoke earlier about scalability. So what can one do right now? What would you advise us, you know, the top, say, three or so tips? What can an entrepreneurial leader do right now to determine if their organization is actually built to scale? Where do they start, and what kind of actions should they take to start ensuring that that's the case when the time comes?
Well, certainly, you know, like any good, if you wanted to get a good look at your own health, a diagnostic, right? Get somebody from outside your organization to come in and look under the hood.
Yes.
And get a really good systemic, get an MRI, we call it an MRI of your organization.
Right.
And an honest one, because inevitably there are things that are not working as you intend, and that's just normal. But you should want to know what those are, and you should trust that if you're the CEO, you're the one least reliable to determine what it is, by virtue of your role. So get a good assessment, get a good look under your hood of what's happening. Make sure it's not just qualitative. Make sure it's quantitative. Make sure it's forensic in its nature. And then put that data in front of your team and have a hard conversation about what it's saying, because it should tell you the story that your organization is telling itself about itself. And it should tell you where there are contradictions in that story. It should tell you where there are conflicting points of view in that story. It should tell you where people are living with tensions they shouldn't have to. Organizations are natural containers of tensions. There are always healthy tensions. But if there are tensions that have become conflicting and people to sort of become rivalrous in nature to survive, that's not good. And the early signs of that are stoppable. And that's where your disasters are set up years before they become problems. And so good diagnostic, even every several years, just by when we go for a physical checkup every year, is a great thing to do, just to know, is your organization doing what you intend for it to do? The second one is get personal feedback, right? Mm-hmm. So the second one is get people to tell you how they experience you. Model for others what it means to let people speak into your own leadership and give you feedback on how they're experiencing you, and then model for them what it means to change in response to that feedback.
Mm. So do you have like a 30-second case study you can share with us?
Lots of them. We recently went into a very large $30 billion organization. Actually, let me do a startup one, an entrepreneur one, because it's more relevant. A very heavy technology Silicon Valley growth organization went in to do a diagnostic. Lots of different investors' opinions, lots of different views on what should happen next. A lot of tailwinds. Did a full diagnostic of the organization. Interviewed, you know, the board, 20 executives, and came back. And what was happening was the board was reaching too far down into the organization. The investors were having way too much say. The CEO was not able to scale. Wasn't scaling his leadership the way he needed to, and his leadership team was compressed. So they're playing too low. And we had to elevate the role of the board, isolate them from participating in work that wasn't theirs to participate in, get their fiduciary responsibilities clear, elevate the CEO's ability to lead at a more strategic perch, and build in the scalability the organization needed for the leadership team to lead the kind of growth that we're going to have in the next.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Perfect, perfect. So I'd like to, in closing, to offer you really quickly the opportunity to give our listeners a gift via two quick recommendations: a book that was very impactful for you, and an app. What would you say?
I think David White's book, Crossing the Unknown Sea, should be required reading for the planet of everybody in the workforce trying to find meaning in their work and find meaning in their life, is a great book.
Love it.
I think if you have children, you need Cash App so you can get them quickly. If you're in other cities, Waze is important to find your way around. And I'm a big fan of Outlook, and the Outlook is a super app because it works so well mobily, unlike other organizing apps. So those are my favorites.
Thank you so much. Thank you really so much, Ron, for being my guest here. And thank you, our listeners, for spending this precious hour with us. Did you hear anything today that was useful to you? Anything new? Anything that reinforced perhaps something that you already knew or suspect us? Let us know by writing to us at host@operationallyspeaking.com. And don't forget to point your business friends and colleagues to Operationally Speaking. And of course, share your thoughts about today's episode on your favorite social media. To find out how we can turn your organization into a well-oiled machine so that you can break through any limiting ceilings, align the right people in the right seats, and skyrocket your business value, give us a call at 617-731-3132 or email us at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. And I promise you'll never regret that call, ever. So see you again next Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern or 12 noon Pacific. And until then, make it an operationally sound and a joyous, highly performing week. Goodbye.
Thank you for tuning in to Operationally Speaking. Be sure to join your host, Sergio Semel, for another great program 1 week from today. We're live every Friday at 12 noon Pacific Time, 3 p.m. Eastern Time, on the Voice America Business Channel. In the meantime, you can reach Sergio for additional questions at 1-617-731-3132 or by email at os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Again, that is os@getbusinessmomentum.com. Enjoy your upcoming weekend, and may you and your business make it a smooth and successful week.